the Comedy Fix. I am your host, Sam, along with my sidekicks as usual, Jamie and Chris. Excited to have you guys here to support me today. Just getting going. How are you guys? What's going on?
Good. Everything's good. Last night, my wife came home. She was out of town, and we were talking about some stuff, and I literally sighed. I went, all I do is improv. As if I were like a coal miner or something. It was like in my bones, like just improv, which is a blessing almost all the time.
Yeah, you could say that same exact text and be, all I do is improv. All I do is improv.
All I do is improv. I was doing the math in my head earlier today. So on Saturday, our team got to perform at the Steel Stacks Improv Festival in Bethlehem, Pennsylvania, which was really cool. Nice big crowd, which was a lot of fun. On Sunday, I had a duo rehearsal. Monday, I took a break because it's Sabbath. Last night, had trio rehearsal. Tonight, I'm going to coach a team. Friday, I promised to go see a friend show. So it really kind of gives me like tomorrow night off, which is kind of nice, you know, to build a little bit of a break in there. But I was having the impression that I wasn't doing a lot. And then I was like, man, you say yes to stuff, it starts to pile up after a minute.
I mean, everything you just mentioned is cute. that's all I've been doing for fucking 10 years, Sam. I know it's not a competition, but like, this is all I do is improv.
All you do is improv.
Jamie, we didn't check in with you. What's up, dude?
Well, all I do is improv. Now some clown, but I still put that in the category of performance type stuff. So it's still in the same ballpark. And I don't know. I was thinking, because I always get to the West Side early before the park or the live direct shows, just because I don't know. I just like to get there and check out stuff and see what's up and see what people are doing. And without mentioning any names, because, you know, don't need to do that, it is so hard to watch improv. I really don't enjoy it at all, which is crazy to me because I love improv as an art form. I'm obsessed with it. I've been doing it for nonstop for more than a decade. And I was thinking about it. I'm like, God, this is hard to watch. I don't want to watch this. And I don't know if that's me, if that is just my mood at 8 p.m. on a Monday night, if that is where, you know, I'm just not jiving with the teams performing. It could be a multitude of factors, but I'm just like, you know, we've kind of been hinting at this just with all we do is improv, but it's like, what's going on? I don't really have a specific question. I was just observing like, wow, I'm obsessed with this art form and I can't stand being here right now.
What's going on is a great question. And Sam, I want to get your thoughts on this too, because first of all, there's a reason why improv is the butt of every fucking joke, because unfortunately, a lot of it is not terrific. But now the reasons behind why it's not terrific, I think, is something interesting to discuss. But I personally am, and you know this, Jamie, and you're doing the same thing. I personally am trying to change the way it's been done. And that sounds like kind of grandiose, but I mean it. I'm really trying to shift the focus onto things that I think are the most important in performance, as opposed to the things that I've been told are the most important things in performance. And frankly, I see people on stage doing the things that they've been told is the most important, and it's not working most of the time. But Sam, I'm a fucking rebel, dude. I know you, I know Jamie, so my mind is all over the place. I'm curious, if I went to Philly, and I know you got a rep for your city hard right now, and I saw just a typical three shows, not like the best ones, not a student show, just your kind of typical shows, would I have a good time, do you think? It's a weird question. Like, yeah. Also, I just want to say, I'm not in a bad mood. I've slept well. I'm in good spirits. I want to be there. Would I be impressed? Would I enjoy myself?
Even before Sam answers this, I want to, because I know this can be like an uncomfortable thing to talk about, or we can feel like, oh, we don't want to sound like assholes or ungrateful or mean in any way. But something, and then we'll let Sam talk eventually. This is his episode. The clown work that I've been doing lately asks you to be honest as an audience member. You know, how are you receiving this work? It's not your obligation as an audience member to enjoy the show. Like, we shouldn't have that pressure put on an audience member. Like, I have to like this. Like, you're free to see a show and be totally uninterested in it. It's the performer's job to grab you. Right. And so, thinking about it that way, like, I don't want to sound like assholes or ungrateful that we're in this privileged position of IC improv. What's going on with the performance? If we can just have an honest conversation.
But Jamie, and we'll let Sam talk. I think that's a lot of people's beef with improv, is even especially those who don't do it. They show up to their friend's show and they feel obligated to laugh when they're really, things aren't funny and they feel anxious and they're uncomfortable. Yeah. So we do put a lot of pressure on the audience to give us the response we want. I mean, I don't feel like I do that personally, but maybe that's just built into the system.
Yeah. Well, yeah. What is the role of the audience? Is the audience to be there to receive the show? Is the audience supposed to participate in the show through active, or is it, you know, can they just sit there and it's up to the performers to really just blow them away? Like, what is the obligation, if you walk into a, let's just say, an improv theater, what is your obligation? What is your role as an audience member? I don't know. All right, Sam.
Yeah, I've been here the whole time. it's interesting to me because I feel like you guys are blending so many different ideas together, and it's hard, right? It's almost like saying, like, what is literature? Like, all right, well, like, it can be anything, but like, if we want to talk about like a certain author or a certain movement, like, that's going to give us a little bit more that we can hang on to. To answer the question of like, if you just saw three shows in Philly, yeah, you'd probably come away with having a great time. Like, am I going to promise that it's the best improv you've ever seen? No, but I wouldn't expect that in LA or New York either. We have many individuals who are really great performers individually. I think as a smaller market, there's a little bit of a higher bar to getting a show going. There's got to be a little bit of a premise behind it. There's got to be a little bit of a hook to it. People don't just show up for, you know, improv, right? So there is a level of professional theater that I think Philly kind of brings to that style a little bit. And it's funny to hear this because we also had like the Improvised Shakespeare Company play the Kimmel Center in Philly on Thursday. They were on their way to Steel Stacks and played there as well. But Kimmel Center in Philly is where like Steve Martin and Martin Short come to do like their duo, or the Philharmonic plays there. It's a big theater. And I'm watching and I'm seeing like Blaine Swen and Joey Bland and, you know, five guys on stage with microphones, and they're doing seven scenes for a 2-hour show, and they're killing it. I mean, the laughs are happening frequently. The format itself sets them up to rhyme and pun and be absurd and play multiple games. And it was the most polished comedy product I've seen coming out of improv. And I've seen them before, but even at this like road show, I was like, okay, sold out crowd. This is improv done to the top of the game, basically, as far as like a product for the audience goes. I don't think that audience was buying an $80 ticket to say, I don't like this, right? Like, they're going to that show, they're spending a lot of money, and they're expecting a show as good as Comedy Legends, right? And so I think part of all of this is, were some of the teams I saw at Steel Stacks the best thing I ever saw? No, of course not. But like, that's what a festival is for, you know, those sorts of communities. I don't know. I'm a little bit more hopeful than I think you guys are, but I'm also in a different place. I'm not seeing the same volume, I think, in the same way.
But Sam, what do you think the role of an audience member is? When you go to a show, what are you agreeing to do as an audience member? what mental state are you coming in with? What are you agreeing not to do? You know, like what are the rules that you see for an improv show in particular?
Here's my contract with an audience, both as a performer and as a member. I am coming to perform to make you laugh, and I am coming to watch your show to laugh. I am not here for dramatic improv. I have tried it. I don't like doing it. It doesn't give me the same pleasure. I don't really like watching it, no more than I'd like to watch like a dramatic play. It's just not what I'm going out to live theater for. I'm going out for comedy. So for me, a lot of these things come back to, is it funny? Is it making me laugh? Is it trying to make me laugh? Because there's also a difference in what you guys are talking about between someone is making the creative decision to alienate the audience. And let's talk about what that means and let's unpack that decision. And someone who is trying to make me laugh, but isn't very successful at it for whatever variety of reasons that might be. Those are two different shows that I might not like, but I'm disliking them for different reasons.
I feel like we typically see the people that are trying to make you laugh but are failing at it, in my experience. I don't really see the... Actually, I do the other shows you're talking about, but I don't see those shows. I don't see the dramatic shows. I don't see the more, I don't know, like genre-bending shows. I just see a group of people who genuinely kind of like each other, maybe not fully trust each other, trying their best to make me laugh. And that's almost always a recipe for failure. And I'm laughing at the wrong times because I see this poor person forcing this moment in, being denied, or someone's not picking up on it. And it's just, it's sad. It's sad. You know, I just told a story the other day, but I guess it was 2 years ago, Heyday did a show at some festival in Orange County. And there were these four women that came out. They were before us, I believe, to do a quick set, I don't know, 20-minute set. And it was kind of like short form games. It was like they asked for a word and the word was deer, I remember. And then we just saw a quick series of 10 to 15 second scenes using the word deer in different contexts, like the animal, like Dear John, like, oh dear. And At first I rolled my eyes because I'm an asshole, but I was watching how much fun they were having, Sam. They were having a fucking blast. I mean, they were having so much fun that you can't fault that. So I'm not even mad at, you know, less experienced performers not doing well. What I get mad, what I don't know if the word is mad, but what bums me out as an audience member is that they're not having fun either. So I have to watch you not have fun and try to make me laugh while you're trying to do all this math up there. It's just a bummer. But you know, but Jamie, I also feel like I'm in that. You and I are in a clown class together, and you've taken much more clown than I have. But I remember our instructor talking about like, no, the audience doesn't have to give you anything until they're ready. That feels a little harsh too. You know, because I've seen, well, it's classic, right? I bartended at the West Side Comedy Theater for years, so I saw a lot of audience members watching shows. And you never want to see the person who sits down with their arms crossed, right? That old, like, trope of, like, make me laugh. Like, that's not a fun place to be either as an audience member. Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, I was surprised that IO in Chicago had stand-ups before a lot of their shows. Not surprised in a bad way, but like it warms up the room, right? When you shoot a sitcom, it's not just the play that's on the stage. There's a stand-up in the audience that's like really kind of revving them up or whatever. That's why a lot of people are like, why is it so funny when they're at home? Because, well, they were kind of primed to be in that very sort of like warm audience state. Yeah.
You know, but also I feel like improvised Shakespeare isn't a fair comparison to typical improv shows. You know,
why not?
Yeah, well, let's talk about that. I feel like we're watching people displaying either innate or trained talent to the highest of their abilities. Let me go a little bit further with that. Yeah, great, for sure. You know, Ross Bryant is in that cast, somebody who I've been on a team with for a couple of years in Chicago, someone who I've admired for a long time. He's always been the smartest person on my team. He's just like super quick, super smart, super everything. I don't know how to word this, but that's not a fair comparison to Team X going up on a Monday night, because I'm not seeing people hit their highest talent marks. Most of these people are very talented at software engineering or other aspects of their life, where Ross Bryant and those guys are trained, talented performers, actors. And I don't think a lot of improv teams are made up of that. Well, that's not true. I guess in LA there are, but it's a different skill set I see. And then the problem is people watch that show and go, I want to do that. So they have nowhere near the level. And frankly, I've been doing it as long as Ross has. I'll never be as good as him in that arena. And I've been doing this for a very long time, and I'm very good at this. It's not a fair compare. Like, it's not, you go, I wouldn't ever want to be anywhere near them doing a show and me having to do a show. They win every time.
Yeah, but I'm thinking of other artistic pursuits, right? Of like music. And it's like, yeah, they're a really good rock band. And like, maybe I'm not great at punk, but I can kind of see how they're rocking out, and I can try to infuse that a bit into my own show. I mean, I think what's tough about seeing them and then sort of listening or thinking about other shows I've seen is like, they're going really hard. Right. And like, they have a lot of experience, and they have a lot of rehearsal time, and they have a lot of practice in it. And I feel like a lot of the shows that are around, not quite as much rehearsal time, not quite as much training for the
individual. For sure.
Quite clearly figured out what form they're doing, or even like nailed the form they're doing. I mean, the one thing I'll say about Improvised Shakespeare, they're not innovating on their form. I've seen them now for a couple of years and been able to kind of recognize what they're doing. It's the same form every time. I don't care. It's great. They've figured it out. But people who are doing more organic stuff, or like, we're doing the Herald, but we don't really like the Herald. Like, yeah, you're probably not going to do a great Herald then, because that's.
But what else are they to do? That's kind of where, that's my challenge in my workshops and my classes, is now I have to somehow get through to 12 to 13 individuals and ask them to sit with themselves, to ask themselves the questions of that are, you know, what do I love? What do I want to do? What brings me the most joy in performance? People don't take the time to ask themselves that, Sam. And so then I have to see people, again, I say this all the time, but doing their impression of what they think is good, instead of firing from a place that sparks them. Whether you or I like it or not, I rarely see somebody rocking on stage in one of my classes or whatever. I mean, I know they're students, but they're not tapping into or asking themselves the right questions, I don't think. And I don't think any training center, for the most part that I know of, ask their students to ask those questions of themselves. They just run them through a program. And so I don't know where I'm going with that. It's just, it feels like it's off kilter. If you want to do something as great as Improvised Shakespeare, what are you genuinely like great at or love to do, or are you willing to put in all the work to do? Like, I'll see that version. I'll go see the CPA show with a bunch of accountants improvising if that's their passion, that's what they're sparked by. But instead, I'm seeing people nervous and scared and flailing and trying to make me laugh. And it's a bummer.
Yeah, I feel like we haven't. I feel like we're teaching people how to improvise, and we're not necessarily teaching people how to be playful or be funny. And I think that's why UCB actually like really kind of took off, is like, look, I really like the people at Iowa West, but those shows were kind of a mess. And I think UCB kind of figured out that like, hey, you want to be funny? Like, this is how you can be funny. And people are like, yeah, I do want to be funny. There's a balance there, and like clowning's coming around or whatever. But like at a certain point too, like, why are you stepping on stage? Like, if you're nervous and you kind of don't like it and you don't have something to show off, like why are you putting yourself out there?
Probably because every training center in the country is saying, come take a class to get out of your shell, better public speaking skills, think on your feet. It's just not fucking true. I mean, it's just not true. I don't know. I don't see it.
Benefits from class without performing?
Say again?
Can't you get those benefits from a class without having to perform?
Sure. But for some reason, we make them perform you know, and then three of them like it, and they like two other people in the class who kind of like it, and now I'm coaching them. And that's what I'm dealing with. By the way, I'm not angry. I love it. And that's my challenge. It really is. And sometimes somebody will make a move that I think is so special, and they'll look at me like, is that okay? I'm like, that is good. That is you. That is you shining, even though it doesn't look like what the other person you see on stage is doing.
You guys sound like a high school drama program. Like, that's kind of what I'm hearing, which is like, yeah, like people who are interested in it, like we'll give them an opportunity to go up on stage, like whether they're good or not, that's not really the point. Like, we're kind of looking for people who are interested in doing it, and so what? We'll accept it, and that's fine.
That's not true. That's what everyone else is doing. Okay. That's not what I'm doing. Oh. I am taking the time to make sure that they ask these questions. I am forcing them to go to places that feel uncomfortable, that may be a place where they're tapped into actual inspiration and making moves from that place. I'm watching everybody else throw the fucking mediocre drama team up on stage over and over and over. That's the fucking show Jamie's talking about. That's what we have to watch. So don't, but then we also then can't compare those teams to fucking Shakespeare. You know, it's just like, it's insane. Also, I'm coming to believe some people are very fucking funny and some people are not very fucking funny. And I'm not very fucking funny.
That's what I'm saying. You got to teach people to be funny. That's what
I don't know if you can. And I know that's like an age old question. Like
100%.
It's old timey. But like, well, you can give them the formula for funny. Like, we see that on stage. And now I have to watch, again, photocopied versions of a textbook on stage where they hit the thing, they came back to it, they heightened it twice, and they edited it. I'm not being moved or inspired. Thank God there's enough improv and enough players to satisfy all the people in the world. That's not the improv I want to see. And when I see somebody like Shakespeare, which I haven't seen, but reminds me of somebody like a Wayne Brady type, somebody who's just like so good at this specific thing, I'm stoked. I go, that's such a great show. They're doing a good thing. Now, back to what I do, which is nothing like what they do. And you know what? I've been spending my whole fucking life trying to find this balance between, I mentioned this before, between this commerce and this art and stuff. And it's just like, I'm just about done with the fucking commerce part, dude. I'm just about fucking done. Cause I'd never feel as good than when I'm doing my art shit. And I don't give a fuck if anybody comes anymore. I mean, I'm gonna promote the shows because poor Jamie has to pay for the space and I want him to get his money back. But otherwise, you know, God bless everybody.
100%. 100%. I mean, it's so funny to me because like people don't get into painting to make money, right? There are tons of novelists who write crappy books every year. And if we said like, oh, what is wrong with all these novels? It's like, yeah, they're not good books. They're written by inexperienced people who care enough to complete a novel. But I mean, I've done too much comedy writing to think you can't teach people to be funny. I just don't think the improv community is doing a good job of teaching people to be funny. I think there are ways to do it. Jamie, you're on this podcast.
You guys have been blowing my minds for like 10 minutes. Like, my face is melting. My hair is blown back. This is crazy. This is great. I don't even really know what we're talking about, to be honest. I've lost the thread. But to me, it sounds like we're kind of talking about helping people find their voice. You know, the Wayne Brady's of the world, the Shakespeare performers, they found something that they either are innately good at or they were able to like train and get better faster than the average. So either one of those, maybe a combination of both, but people who have found their voice and then it's so pure and crystal clear that people can't help but love it because it's exactly what it promises to be and it gets them every time and it just feels real. So, you know, superstars like Wayne Brady or the Shakespeare guys, you know, they've just found their voice and they've kind of honed and polished it into something that people can appreciate. I feel like, I don't know if this is woo-woo, but I feel like everybody has a voice, you know, and I think there's a way to hone and polish that voice so that everybody could appreciate it. You don't need, you know, a formula for funny. You just need to help that person kind of clear away the clutter, which I think clown attempts to do. It attempts to help clear away the clutter of, you know, social constructs and all these things, or, you know, you can play with these different kind of masks that we all wear so that you can acknowledge that some of this stuff is clutter, but some of it's a tool as well. So, you know, I don't know if I'm adding to this conversation in a constructive way, but it feels like we're talking about finding your voice, which I think, you know, is what David's good at. Chris, I think you're good at. It sounds like those, you know, Shakespeare guys, they've done that. And so people really respond well to that because it's simultaneously individual and universal, which I think is what's so cool is because, oh, that's Wayne Brady's voice, but it also connects and delights a whole room of people, you know?
The one thing I unfortunately have a problem with what you're saying, and I'm coming to terms with this myself, is I think for a while, I thought if I find my voice and I hone that voice and I play and I heighten that and I'm standing in my pure inspiration, the people will come. That might also not be the case. I'm sure there's plenty of people who are very talented that people don't, I mean, Sam said it here, you know, I'd go do a show tomorrow night where all I did was cry for 90 minutes. You know what I'm saying? You don't want to see that show, Sam. And I'm coming to terms with that, like, well, what am I doing? Why am I doing this? And who am I doing this? Who am I doing this for?
I think it's not about, you know, your voice or nobody coming to see your voice. I think maybe it hasn't been, you know, marketed to a targeted audience that can appreciate it. Because if you market yourself and you play at IO and, you know, the West Side, you're not getting many audience members who are there for that. And so it's going to feel like a lot of misses and people don't get it because that's not what they, you know, Sam walks into an improv theater, he wants to laugh. He's not going to be signed on to Chris Alvarado's, you know, artistic voice if you're not making him laugh. And I guess that's fair enough. So I think it's more about like marketing and finding the audience and then building it from there than it is, you know, people don't want your voice. I think people do.
Yeah, I hear that.
Just who is the question, you know?
I hear that.
Yeah, it did sound like for a second Chris was going to say, there are plenty of talented people who no one wants to see, like Sam, but then he didn't. And he did, so it was nice. But I mean, I actually wonder that. And maybe it's the unpopular kid inside of me, but I do wonder if there is some level of kismet, coincidence, unaccountable forness, where it's not just, oh, this person has their voice. It's this person has their voice and the experience, and they're saying it at the right time that other people are resonating to it, right? And I think that's such a challenging thing, and we see this in different arts, right, where like different things resonate at different times and then they're not quite as interesting anymore. I don't think people have lost their voice. I just think it's not as relevant, or we're more excited by some sort of new voice, right? But it's something I've struggled with a long time. How do you find your voice?
I love all this, and Jamie, I hope you're right. It just ends, it's just this weird cycle of, I think I'm finding my voice, this is what I like, but I only market it to this particular, you know, sect of people, mainly because I'm limited in what I could do, or I think I'm limited. So then it doesn't really hit. So then that makes me question my voice. So then I watch something that hits. I go, maybe I should do that. So then I start doing, again, my impression of what I think the people want to see. And then it's this weird cycle of, who am I? Why am I doing this? Is it for them? Is it for me? And Sam, when I hear the sentence, when Sam walks into an improv show, he wants to laugh. I think that is very, very fair. Yeah. I think that is very, very, very fair. I just don't know, or we are currently, Jamie, exploring other avenues and, you know, renting our own spaces at more quote unquote, like legitimate theater, as opposed to just like comedy theater, and seeing what kind of audience we can find. Even that process is very satisfying. It's very, very fun. Yeah. Our rehearsals are incredible, and I feel very satisfied. But I'm also, I mentioned this last episode, like I'm in a privileged position where before I felt like I had to pop in order for me to have a career, you know, and that is not the case as much anymore. I don't know.
Well, here's the thing, is this might relate to validation. See our last week's episode, but is there, you know, are you trying to sell your voice to an audience who doesn't want it, that's harsh, but you know what I'm saying, to an audience that doesn't want it. Because is there an audience who would want your voice, but you don't want them? For example, what if you really connected with 80-year-olds at retirement homes? Is that where you would go do your shows? Like, they loved everything you were doing, but would you, Chris, want that audience? Like, do you, is that the validation that you would be find valuable? Or is it certain audience members, certain types of people, cool people, LA people, the UCB crowd, whatever, blah, 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 you know, whatever the demographics are that you find valuable in assessing the metric of your own voice? Like, that too complicates it, because, you know, maybe your voice connects with, you know, weirdo French people who like online shows. Like, I don't know, like, there's so many different ways to package this in a way that's like, oh, I don't know that I would be super excited to have that audience, but that's the audience that likes me. How do you guys feel about that? I mean, it's kind of all hypothetical, but, you know, maybe your audience isn't cool.
I love that. I love that. And listen, you know, no matter what I say about art and inspiration, I want to be cool. I want the cool people to like it as well. I don't know if that's it's not the only thing I want, but, you know, I want to be a fucking rapper in this improv. You know, I want it to be fucking cool, which is a whole nother thing. Not cool, it doesn't matter. I don't want to get into all that right now, but that's a great point. What if my audience were 80 and 90 year olds in retirement homes? That's really interesting. And Jamie, I keep hearing you in my head. You've asked me this a number of times, and I might even have mentioned it here on this podcast, but, you know, the other night or the other day after a meeting, you go, "What do you want?" And it's, Sam, it's echoing through my brain. And when I lay down at night, that's going through my mind. And when I get up, it's going through my mind. What do you want? You know?
Yeah. Yeah.
And maybe I haven't asked myself. I don't know if I have that answer yet. I mean, I tell you what, I'm not unhappy though. You know, maybe I have what I want, which is the exploration of all of this and students to do it with, but I don't know.
Yeah. I think there's something in seeing like where being satisfied or having some satisfaction in where you are is always a good thing. But also, you know, asking those questions of, well, what am I going towards? I think it's funny, Chris, because I think of you sometimes where we're like in an improv rehearsal and you're like, guys, like, what if it's not funny? And like, what if we like scripted it? Like, what if it was like scripted and not funny? It's like, yeah, like that's a totally valid form of theater. It's not necessarily like improv comedy, but it's theater.
A play.
Like, yeah, it's a play. That might be something you want to explore. That might be something you want to do. And there's no, you know, there's no hard line that says you're no longer an improviser or whatever. But I do think in all of these things, it's like, all right, well, what kind of art do I want to make? What theater do I want to try to make?
How do you answer that question, Sam? Like, how do personally, and then how would you, if you were to advise your students that you're going to coach later tonight or tomorrow, how would you approach that of what do you, I don't know. How would you do that?
I was thinking about this the other day, and, you know, for me, writing and performing is how I process the world and how I communicate myself to people. And so within that, for the most part, I like sitcom kind of vibes. All right. So modern day, a group of friends, a family, people who know each other. It's reasonably grounded. It's very relatable. It's universal to humans in some ways. And so I think for me, I've always tried to take whatever experiences I've had or thoughts and opinions I've had, and how can I discover that in the moment on stage, which I love, and communicate that. And for a long time, I was trying to find my voice, and people around me would have different sort of thoughts on it. And what I really loved was, I forget which singer, it might've been like Joe Cocker or someone like that. It was like, my voice is defined by what I can't do, right? And like, there are things that I as a person am not very good at, or I won't naturally do. And so I just kind of go towards the other stuff that I do want to do, or I do want to try to do. For me, it's kind of always been sitcom, and that still to me is a true star. I have a solo sitcom show on Sunday at 3-2-1 here at Comedy Sports in Philly, which I'm excited for. And the reason why I chose to do that as opposed to like a one-man Shakespeare show, I was thinking about both. I just really love sitcom. And that's just, for me, that's my North Star. And I think for other people, your North Star might change. You might, you know, read something and be interested in a different North Star. It's a tricky thing to kind of figure out, but I do think you have to start a little bit from like who you are as a person. What can you do? What don't you want to do? And kind of carve out some space from there.
Well, let me follow up with that, because that's kind of what I was talking about with like the Wayne Brady and the Shakespeare guys, is clearing away the clutter of the stuff you're not good at, you know, or what's not your voice, to use Joe Cocker's term. And maybe that's the stuff where people are imitating what they think they should be doing, but they're not doing a good job at it. So it feels like that's not actually their voice. That's part of the clutter getting in the way of them finding their voice. How do you approach that conversation with somebody being like, you're just imitating somebody else? Like, this is not good for you. You know,
imitation isn't bad though. I mean, so much of writing was about imitation, right? Was it like Kerouac who would retype The Great Gatsby or whatever? All TV writing is kind of based on imitation at first. And this is, again, like some advice that I would give people in TV writing. If you show me that you have, I'm going to date myself here, but a CSI spec, a Sopranos spec, a 2.5 Men spec, and like a late night show packet, and you give those to me and you're like, I'm a writer. I'm like, yeah, you are a writer, but like, I don't know what kind of writer you are. I can't like commercialize you. You can say, well, I have fun writing all these different things. It's like, yeah, I'm glad you're having fun doing that. You're allowed to have that fun. If you want to get so good at this that you're professional level, you might want to focus on one of these things and like really drill on that and really like get good at that. And so focus there is really an important thing for what we're kind of talking about. And I think there's the difference between, oh, it'd be really fun to do this kind of show and that kind of show. And then there's, well, I'm just going to stick with this team for a decade. And that team's probably going to be better than most teams that come and go after 6 months, or we tried on this format, we tried on that format, and they pop up and down. I don't know if I'm rambling or if that kind of makes sense, but I think you do have to at least try to focus and point towards something.
Jamie, you can think about this while I'm saying this next thought, because I want to ask you, what do you think your North Star is, Jamie? What do you think your voice is, or what do you, how you're trying to develop it? And also, maybe we're the very few, not the very few, but I would imagine a large percentage of people who take an improv class or do improv shows just want to like have fun. I'm talking about across, all around the world. I think there's a small percentage of people that want to do this professionally. And I think it might be weird to ask the guy who's in sales, who sells medical supplies, to ask him what his artistic voice is. You know, that might be, he's like, I don't know, I want to act like a duck tonight, so I'm not thinking about the stresses of my life, perhaps. Where the rub is for me is I want that person to act like a duck, but instead they're acting like another improviser or something. I don't know. It still doesn't feel like honest. But like, is it fair to ask professionals who work 40, 50, 60 hour week jobs to sit down with themselves, and I'm saying this to myself, you know, and be like, who are you? What do you want to say? And what do you want to be?
Absolutely.
It is fair to ask them that yourself.
Not only fair, it's imperative, because great, that process is you discovering who you are, and nothing is more important than that. And who gives a shit about your job?
Ooh.
You know? So, you know, because maybe your job doesn't align with who you are, and that process of self-exploration and finding what your voice is and finding what your likes are, both comedically, but also personally and artistically, you know, I mean, that's where it's all at. Once you have that, once you have a clear idea of that, those are, I think, the happiest people, because they can live an honest life that aligns with their actual views, not the views they should have, not the ones they're trying to have, not the ones they think that will make them cool. You know, everyone's playing that rat race kind of game. and not even just comedy and improv, but in every facet of society, everybody's playing the rat race. So finding that honesty and authenticity, I think, is imperative.
I also don't know if we're giving people enough credit. I think have fun is a bit of a cop-out. You can have fun playing basketball, right? So why are you here to have fun? And so there might be a little bit more we can dig in there. I also, you can aspire to a level of excellence, right? Even if you're doing it a couple hours a week, you can aspire to that. And I don't think we should let people off the hook, for better or worse. And I think there are some coaches who are more cheerleaders based on their team. And I think there are more, you know, some who are really more like coaches, right? And we're sort of training and drilling to get better. And it's a tough balance for every team, but I'd push
people. I like more, that. Yeah. I like the idea of we can all aspire. And yeah, I like that. So Jamie, what do you think? Like, and before you answer, I have more things to say. No, but like when Sam says like, I am this or I am that, I like the sitcom, I like this. In my head, I'm always like, I don't know. I like to turn shit over, I guess, and like look underneath. But how do you, what does that look like on stage? Jamie, what's your deal?
Yeah, it's difficult. I have learned not to really like pin the moth to the corkboard, because as soon as you do, it feels like, oh, now we're making a science of it. Now I've locked this specimen. Now I've figured it out. Whereas to me, I feel like it's... Sam?
Sam?
This is improper audience etiquette. You walk into a podcast recording studio, there are certain rules that are you're bound by. I'm just kidding. Why are you booing, Sam? What's your response to that?
You know, it doesn't feel correct for you in some way. I understand why you're saying it. But I would push you a little bit more. I think there's something. It doesn't necessarily have to be a piece of artwork or something else, but I would say like there's a Jamie-ness, right? I see you as someone who does have a fairly strong voice. You perform with intent, you make strong choices. These are not coming from a amorphous place. And so this answer, I'll just be a little pushback on. It feels very amorphous of like, well, I don't know, it changes day to day, sure. But like, I don't want to put words in your mouth. I have a thought, but I'll just sort of rephrase it for you.
No, it's fair. I agree with what you're saying, and I agree with what I just said. I think they're both true. One is, it depends on what level we're zooming in on, because I was answering this question on your level. Like you said, you like sitcoms. So I'm like, well, there's not really something that I can pin myself that I like from a genre perspective or from a technique perspective. That doesn't feel right. So that was kind of the moth on the corkboard. But if you zoom out from that and speak more broadly, consistently, I love to question things and poke things and, you know, dissect things and flip things over. But so that has remained consistent, but how that actually manifests itself on stage is constantly changing and different and very squishy, which is what makes this so fun for me, is because week after week, I'm coming with a different perspective of what I want to do and what my focus is and what I like and what I dislike and so on and so forth. So, but to go back to where I started this conversation, you know, that makes me a very challenging audience member. Cause like, I don't like the same thing from week to week, and I'm seeing the same shows one after the other. So it's like, it's just weird. I guess I'm impossible to please because I see people and moments and shows that like I love and are beautiful and I'm all on board. I'm not a hater, but I just, maybe it's hard to pin down. So I think both things are true. The just different levels of analysis.
Yeah, I wonder if you've also changed in the time I know you, as we all change over a period of years. Because at one point in time, like I would have said maybe like inspiration was your North Star. For a long time, it was sort of like what inspires you, be inspired by things. If you saw not great improv, but you thought the people on stage were at least inspired by a thought, you would actually like really enjoy the show. And so I wonder now if that has shifted a little bit now towards this more like questioning and poking. And so it's very unsatisfying when you see things that you could poke on stage that other people are kind of like letting pass, which is very relatable, I will say.
I think one is cause and one is effect. I think the inspiration, you're right, probably undergirds the whole thing. But I'm inspired to poke. I get excited when I'm like, oh, there's something there. There's a little tiny nugget of something. That gets me excited and inspired. And so I think, yeah, I think we're all kind of maybe saying the same things, just kind of reframing it differently.
I found this interesting. The other day, one of my current students was talking to another one of my students as we were wrapping up. And he said something to the effect of like, well, all acting classes are cults. And I thought that was funny. And he looked at me, he was like, no offense. I was like, none taken. And then as I walked out of the space, they were still outside talking. And I wanted to kind of talk a little bit more about that. Kind of harkens back to our guru episode or whatever. But I was like, I don't think my stuff is cult-like, because like it literally changes. In a 6-week class, I'm inspired differently every single week by something. Like, unless the cult is like, come to a place where you question everything always, perhaps. But he was saying, as a more quote unquote legitimate actor that he is, he's not an improviser, that he's been to some of the hottest acting classes in Los Angeles. And that he gets the sense that in every one of those, the lead instructor, the person whose name is on the building, is so dialed into their philosophy because it makes them feel more relevant. And like, this is the way you absolutely have to do it. My way is the best. That's if I keep saying that and people keep believing it, I can keep paying the rent on this expensive space in Los Angeles, which logically, I understand that theoretically, I understand that position. I mean, we look at Meisner and Adler and Stanislavski, like there are components to those people that they did have their own specific take. I just, and he said he's learned to, and this is, I'm sure most people do eventually, I don't know, that you take what you want and you leave the rest. And that's the healthy way to approach that. But I'm bringing all this up back to like the sitcom thing. Sam, I don't know that I have that, you know, that philosophy that I could write the book on tomorrow, you know?
But like, isn't for you, like, is there pink music, or is there something that's like an energy that you enjoy to channel? I mean, I feel like maybe I set us off in the wrong way with just like my specific here, but I think like I knew artists who were comedy writers, but they were really inspired by like 1920s jazz and blues music. And so they would pitch jokes like crazier than a bag of rats, which is like something from like a blues song that I never heard of, right? And it wasn't necessarily like, and like, I guess it kind of goes a little bit back to like voice a little bit, like what influences you have in your life and how you use these things. But it goes also back to like the CPA person a little bit, where it's like, yeah, you're an accountant. So like, wow me with your accountant stuff. Like, we're doing a tax scene. Like, you better be on fire, like a Shakespeare nerd in a Shakespeare scene. Like that's the stuff for me. And so it's not even like,
I hear that. I like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I like that. You know, occasionally, and I'm thinking of one person in particular, he's on a team I coach and he's like really good with like business and numbers and stuff. And occasionally he'll find himself in one of those scenes and he becomes super, I mean, he like goes off, you know, the scene where you start off like, boss, am I getting the promotion? And then he'll be like, no, and let me tell you why not. And it's fun. It's fun to watch him reach into his bag of tricks. And that's what it very well may be, a bag of tricks. But I gotta say, it is Shakespeare level expertise. And that is an enjoyable thing to watch. I'm not good at any of that stuff. I don't have that. I don't know. I can't write graffiti on the stage or break dance anymore. You know what I mean? Like, what? I don't know what my CPA is. My CPA Superman ability is teaching and coaching long form improvisation and performance, which is maybe why it's good that I'm jumbled and changed and looking to turn things over. Maybe that's what makes me so good, Sam. I just mean, I don't know. I don't know what the hell I'm saying anymore. What the hell are we saying? What is any of this about? You know what? Last night I was working on my website because Jamie keeps working nonstop on his fucking shit. So I guess it makes me, I got to work hard on my stuff, whatever. And I was showing my wife some images that I might use or whatever. And then she goes, "No, that one's dorky, no offense." And I was like, "Oh, no. Talk to me. I want to hear what you have to say." And she wants to be supportive and not rude, you know? But she mentioned something along the lines of like the drama stuff. And I go, "Oh, I don't do that anymore." She's like, "You don't?" I was like, "No, I haven't done that in a long time." But because I had planted that flag pretty deeply a while ago, it's still resonating with my own wife, who shares a bed with me, who doesn't know that I haven't said the words dramatic improv or whatever in 14 months. It's really funny that even she still thinks that way about me. And I don't know where I'm going with that, but it's just like, I don't want to be pigeonholed for sure. I don't know. It's interesting.
That's because, you know, your voice might change, but your branding might be a little bit behind it, which is a challenge, right? I mean, that kind of goes back to some of that commercial versus art stuff.
I mean, nobody wants to do this right now, but if you are listening to this podcast, you probably kind of maybe like us a little bit. Here I am saying, I don't do drama stuff anymore necessarily. Yet, if you go to my website today, I changed an image last night at 12:30 a.m. It is a very dramatic image.
I don't even have to go to the website. I can see it in my mind.
You see
Hold
it,
on. I'm going to share screen. Hold on. We're all going to look at this.
Thinking of an image. I'm thinking of an image.
All right, here it is.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I knew it would be black and white.
Well, I didn't realize on yours the text is coming over into the picture. Anywho, I mean, look at that. Wow, why does it look like this? This is scary. Oh yeah, even look at this. Look at my new class. Look at how
this is so fun for everybody listening.
Oh, I know. Look at how sad everyone looks on stage.
I don't know if that's drama so much as woo woo. Maybe you're going more little woo woo improv.
Jamie, I'm scared that all of these images look this way on your computer. Nobody wants to hear this, but that's wild to me that it's all misconfigured.
Are you resizing your window as you design the site? Because I'm guessing Jamie's here a little scrunched a little bit.
Yeah, I'm expanding it now.
See, now things
now it's expanded. Yeah, you just have to fix that in your website. It's not a big deal. If you didn't mention anything, I'd be like, oh, artsy choice.
Yeah, yeah.
So
anyway, look at that two-person image right there. Nothing necessarily displaying comedy, although that might be a funny face, but
might be a funny face.
But okay, here we go. I know everyone's done with me hearing the website stuff, but let's leave it here for 1 second, Jamie. Chris Alvarado Improv Workshops offer a refreshing perspective on improv. Here I am, Sam. No, don't laugh at me. Saying a different approach. Led by Chris Alvarado, these workshops and classes foster an environment of exploration, that's for sure, experimentation, that's for sure, and the freedom to venture beyond the established norms of traditional improv. It's a little wordy, a little clunky, but I do think today that solidifies how I feel about my work. I think that's a pretty true statement there, that you're not going to come and fucking learn tag outs and walk-ons and bullshit like that. Okay. That's chris-alvarado.com, everybody. That's chris-alvarado.com. New 6-week class starting March 7th, 2024. Get in now. I haven't even really promoted it yet. I just put these online. So if you hear this, you can get in while there are still available slots.
What's going on 4-4?
They didn't have the space available.
Oh.
That's simple.
Wow.
Chris, I do think that accurately describes it. And that's one of those things. It's, I think your, you know, crybaby improv, that's maybe your version of my moth on a corkboard. Whereas opposed to here, you're zooming out enough that you're not saying no crybaby improv. You're just saying that and all of it, you know, it's like, it's that and everything else. So it's not, you're not, you know, planting your flag, as we say, in crybaby improv. You're, you know, open to whatever that looks like, crybaby or otherwise.
Yes, I think that's right. And, you know, Sam, I wonder if, stop laughing at me, Sam. And that's, I'm mortified.
No, it's great. It's great. Sam's, it's just the shameless plug that has Sam just rolling in the aisles.
I loved a few things. I loved the Chris Alvarado workshop led by Chris Alvarado. I love, I'm just like, I do love Crybaby Improv as a theater name. Like,
I
would love to be in level 3 of Crybaby Improv.
Like, I know.
Fucking sweaters and hoodies, Crybaby Improv.
I know. I think in order to satisfy everything, Sam, what I'm going to do is continue to offer these 6-week classes and then just a smattering of one-offs every 2 months, you know, where we can just dial in 2.5 hours of crying, 2.5 hours of silence, 2.5 hours of, you know, that type of shit. Yeah, look at that. You're feeling the vibe, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, I think the silence stuff is great and underutilized, and that's to me, like, where I want to kind of push, which is not so much like what are people doing in improv so much as like what aren't we doing, what can we play with.
I was just in a clown class last night. It was an idiot class specifically, which they're hit or miss, but I'm in a really good one this time, which is enjoyable. But the teacher said, you know, when we're on stage, we have only 4 levers to play with. Levers, however you want to say that. Right. Silence, sound, movement, or stillness. Those are the only things you have to play with. Those are the only 4 levers that a performance can be made of. So, like, dial those up and down. And, like, those are the only things you have to play with. It sounds so simple. It's like, yeah, silence and sound, movement and stillness. That's it. And so, yeah, to, like, play with those different dials of, like, oh, there's, you know, whatever. I don't know. But I really like that, and I wanted to share that with our listening public.
Yeah, I'm making a note on that. I love that. One of the things I've been thinking about a lot, and I'm going to do some of these sort of language game workshops again, which is we focus so much on the world creation, you know, these ideas like tempo. We don't spend, like, are we talking overlapping each other? Are we allowing big pauses? Are we varying our tempo in scenes? Like, these are things that are very immediate and very present on the stage that we don't talk about quite as much.
I use that all the time, Sam. I don't use it. I don't teach it. I use it as a side coaching device all the time, where I'll say things like, both of you go, simultaneous, keep going. Or I'll say things like, this is not language, but I'll go, move closer to that person as you're saying that. I'll play with those things, or walk away, or don't respond just yet. Take that second, make the drink, and then respond. I love that, Sam. And it's so interesting what it does to the whole fucking vibe of a scene. If it's not just I speak, then you speak, then I speak, then you speak. It's so nice. It's so, so nice. Gosh, I'm so self-conscious about that website thing. Thank God nobody can see this. Thank God. This is so dumb. I've been wanting to shoehorn this in this entire time, but we're almost wrapping up. But just a quick thing, because I hear this a lot, and I'm curious to get your takes on it. Can somebody be rusty? So what happens is, a student I haven't seen in 4 months goes, "Oh, I'm rusty." And of course, I let them. Yes, okay, that's how you feel. Great. In my mind, though, I always think like, rusty. I don't know. What's your take on that? Can a performer be rusty?
The first time I performed live after the pandemic, we had moved to Philadelphia and the theater was having Herald auditions, and I hadn't performed like live in person, you know, in 3 years, maybe been like a couple of months since the last Zoom thing or whatever ended, but it'd been a minute. And I'm like going through my head, I'm like trying to prep myself, and I fucking crushed it. Just like knocked it out of the park. And so I would say, like, yeah, if you put this thing away and you don't think about it ever again for a long time, maybe. But I think it's really easy to, like, just kind of go through your head, just improvise like a poem to yourself, right? Like, you can improvise all the time. So the idea of, like, I'm rusty at making something up, like, challenge yourself a little bit.
I know, that's what I was thinking. But then in my head, I'm like, if I'm being honest, I don't think I've taken more than 4 consecutive weeks off of this in, I don't know, 20 years, whatever. So maybe it's not my space to say that you can or cannot be rusty. Jamie, what's your experience?
I feel like coming out of the pandemic, I did feel some cobwebs. I felt like I wasn't as sharp. And maybe that really comes down to presence. I feel like I was so in my head, just maybe having thought about this so much over the pandemic and not actually effectuating and actualizing any of it, that it was so in my head about what, I don't even know how to do anything, because we had done, you know, 60 episodes of The Comedy Fix and I haven't performed in 2 years, that, like, I just felt very unpresent and dull, just dull as in like intellectual. I wasn't like quicker. I didn't have responses to what was going on. I was just kind of like a blob. And so to the extent that that is the same thing as rusty, then yes, I feel like I experienced that coming out of the pandemic.
I guess that makes sense. I used to bowl very regularly, and now I haven't bowled in probably 5 years. I could imagine I would be rusty when I got back into it, right? Just ball placement, that type of stuff. But maybe the rusty that they're referring to, that you're both kind of talking about, or Jamie specifically, is like the not that you need to do it to get better again, but to get yourself in a mindset of being able to kind of play again, like quiet, like maybe something along those lines. I know I'm not really sticking the landing.
Yeah, just being present, I think, was the big challenge.
Yeah.
Now there's another way that this can go too. And it actually, it's the opposite of being rusty. It's if you take a decent amount of a break, you've kind of unconsciously learned everything and consciously forgot all of this stuff that was like front of mind. And so sometimes, depending on like athletic stuff with like muscle memory, right? Like you might do it and now you're unconsciously a lot better. And so there, that can, I think, also happen. So one thing, if someone says they're rusty, just be like, you know what? It's still in your bones. And you probably have a lot of interesting stuff you've been doing since you last performed, like tap into that, right? That's your superpower or whatever. Because that's when I take breaks, that to me is what's energetic about it, is like, oh, I'm not thinking and worrying so much anymore.
You guys,
I like that.
New idea. It's an improv camp, but you go to camp and you don't do improv.
Okay.
Because then you come back and you get better at it because you weren't doing it. You were doing archery and having meals with other people and learning about people. It's basically a camp.
So it's
an improv camp.
Yeah.
No, it's improv camp. Can't
it's more, I guess maybe it's more of like, what are those called when you're addicted to drugs and need to go to rehab? That's it's like you kind of got a detox.
Yeah, you got to go do some horseback riding and shit like that.
Yeah.
Gather some more life experience. Yeah.
Yeah, you'd get way better at improv, not doing improv those 2 weeks, and come back really sharp.
I'll say, well, I do like the idea of that front of mind stuff, Sam. Like there's some validity to that. I will say, when I would come back from doing the Second City boats, on one of the boats, we were doing shows, 15 shows a week. I felt very sharp. I felt like my players were moving in slow motion almost when I was on the team. Like I could see things coming. I was like, oh, whoa. Or I could see like maybe even like a general nervousness in them that I had kind of shaken because I'd spent 4 months in front of hundreds of people 15 times a week. That was an interesting feeling to come off stage like that. Probably wasn't doing my best work, if I'm being honest, though. But I did feel
you had a better sort of analysis in the moment, director's eye maybe, than you did, you know, oh, well, I can just do this old like trick that gets the cruise boat laughing, right?
Which is a whole fucking another episode. But yeah, you do learn those tricks. And let's be honest, there's the first couple months or whatever, 9 weeks, where you want to honor improv and the artistry of it all. And by fucking show 13 of week, whatever the fuck, you're just like, I'll do my Abraham Lincoln impression. Like, I don't give a fuck. Do you know what I mean? Like, this kills every time. Yeah. Anytime I ever try to do something artsy on those boats, they were like, the audience was like, boo. And then you go, can I have a hamburger? Everyone's like, yay.
I mean, think of the art galleries on those cruise boats, right? Like,
yes.
Great MoMA.
Oh, we used to have to teach workshops. We had to, the cast had to like rotate teaching workshops to the passengers. Jeez Louise. Anyway, whole different topic. Maybe we should have somebody on. I know a lot of people that did those boats. There's a lot of stories and performance stories. That could be fun. What are we going to title this episode, Jamie and Sam?
Voice.
Voice?
Voice.
Finding your voice. Voice. Just voice. Yeah.
Less is more. That's you know, voice. You don't need to explain it. If you don't get it, then it's not for you.
Just V.
Oh, just a microphone. No, that's dumb. I like just V.
I think we end when you say, if you don't get it, it's not for you. Done. With this episode.
I think we end now.
And now we're done.
Good stuff.